Talk Show.
Recorded live.
And I heard another voice from heaven saying, come out of her, my people, that ye be not partakers of her sins, and that ye receive not of her plagues. For her sins have reached unto heaven, and God hath remembered her iniquities. Fellow Adamites, we are seeing the cracks emerge in Babylon. We are seeing the cracks spread. I don't believe it will be too long now before we hear Babylon the Great is fallen. And Yahweh willing, we shall all be there to witness it, and all the world shall bear witness to the power of Yahweh. If you have not begun to prepare for the things which are to come, the things which are already starting to see happen, then you had best do so now. Now is the time to make preparations, gather supplies, make plans, and focus your efforts to keep on the straight and narrow path. Be right with the Heavenly Father, and he shall bring you through the plagues that await this doomed nation. Today is November 28, 2010. It's Sunday, and Bill Fink is here for the third installment of Judaism in Germany. How are you doing tonight, sir?
Hello. Praise Yahweh.
Absolutely. Praise Yahweh. And when last we left off, we were discussing how Marr is covering the emancipation of the Jews and how that essentially did nothing to satisfy them. Did they see this as the culmination of a long struggle against their host nation?
Oh, certainly the Jews saw it as their opportunity to start to conquer Christendom, that their emancipation meant that they could raise themselves above us. It didn't mean that they ever wanted to be equals with us. They wanted the freedom to
enslave us,
to enslave and oppress Christians, and that's what they've gained. That's what they had wanted since it was taken from them by the Byzantine emperors in the 6th century A.D.
Yes.
If I could give a recap of last week, I think off the top of my head that Mars admits that the Jews are the people of the Old Testament that they claim to be, right? That's his biggest problem. That's the mistake. Marr made that mistake. A lot of other 19th and 20th century key Aryan figures have made that mistake, and we still make that mistake.
99% of white people make that mistake.
Yeah, we see the nationalists make that mistake today, and it's a critical one because it basically gives the Jews a free ticket, right? If the Jews lie about everything else, why would they ever be so? Why would anyone ever so readily assume that the Jews are telling the truth about that? It's just beyond me, right? In truth, the study of both the Bible and ancient history revealed that the Jews are Canaanites and Edomites, and they infiltrated and usurped the government of ancient Judea, just as they have done to the white nations today. And it would be a great benefit for white nationalists to realize that the pattern that the Jews have taken over Britain and France and Germany and America with in these recent centuries is the same pattern they've used all through time. History repeats itself because the parties in history never cease from acting the way they naturally act, right?
And it's just one more lie. They tell lies about everything, so when they claim to be the people of Moses, why don't the nationalists see it as what it is, just one more lie?
And that's what they should. That's how they should say. Anybody who would actually read the Bible, who would not take for granted it was a Jewish book and just read it and compare it with Josephus and some ancient historical accounts, what would see that the Jews are lying. It's very clear that they're lying. That there's a great lie being told in history. Now Mars corroborates the fact that the Jews were instrumental in the revolutions of 1848 and 1871, and he tells us that the Jews, that they had already controlled the economy of the German state by his time, right?
Yes.
And that shouldn't be a surprise to us because Marr wrote during the period when the Prussian monarchy had come to dominate Germany, which we learn from the pages of that Nestor Webster time and again when we read those pages, those chapters from from her world history that we read earlier in the series, that the Jesuits and through the secret societies had long been planning that the Prussian monarchy come to dominate Germany, right? So why wouldn't the Jew be manipulating for control of the Prussian economy?
Marr describes the 1848 and 1871 instigations and agitations. He basically says it's Jewish self-defense against Christian persecution. Isn't that basically?
Well, right, except that the Jews were crafty enough to not to couch it in those terms, right? From the way I see it, and from what we read in Nesta Webster, it was always the proletariat, the movement of labor, the oppressed laborers who were rising up. The Jews were never laborers. They only used those class that they created that those class divisions and that class warfare in order to gain their emancipation.
I'm wondering too, have you considered that Wilhelm Marr may have been a Jew, since he was married twice, both to Jewesses, he was employed by a Jewish firm, and he was the son of an actor and director?
Well, no, I didn't know he was married to two Jewesses.
Yes, it says that he went to Costa Rica in 1852. I'm taking this from Wiki. And he married the daughter of a Jewish businessman who had renounced...
Do we want to trust Wikipedia?
Well, they name names. I mean, we could look it up. It says Georgine Johanna Bertha Kallenbach. And then...
Okay, look, I would consider that a topic for further research, because I don't really trust Wikipedia in that aspect. And I wouldn't put beyond the Jews wanting to slander an Aryan and that wrote what they consider to be an anti-Semitic diatribe, right?
Even though it's not really anti-Semitic as we would understand it to be.
Well, no, it's not anti-Semitic as we would understand it to be, but the Jews are hating on him for revealing what they're about, which is basically what he's doing, even though he has Jewish identity all wrong, and even though he's quite sympathetic to it. So if he's a Jew, he's another in a long tradition of self-hating Jews, right? But I mean, the writer definitely doesn't make any indication at all that he is a Jew, and I think he refutes it several times here.
All right.
Well, anyway, we see that indirectly Marr is definitely a synthesizer in many aspects of the Jewish cause, and in his support for their religious claims, and purporting not to be biased, we see that Marr unknowingly is, or unwittingly is, heavily biased because he accepts Jewish claims about religion at face value rather than inspecting them. Marr is hated by the Jew for his purported anti-Semitism, yet in a lot of ways he's the Jew's best friend in his writing.
Here's a book by Moshe Zimmerman, who condemns the wife of Wilhelm Marr as the daughter of an apostate Jew. That's what he referred to. He referred to Wilhelm Marr as an anti-Semite who was married to an apostate Jew.
Well, that's odd, but yeah. Well, then Marr is just another in a long line of self-hating Jews or Jewish sympathizers, right? Well, we see Maury Samuel, Bobby Fischer, Marcus Ravage. The list goes on and on, right?
Well, they're not. This Jew's not saying that Marr is a Jew. He's just pointing out that each of his three marriages, it turns out, Wilhelm Marr was married three times. All of them were to Jews.
Well, that's awfully strange if that's true, because you don't get married to three Jews in a row by mistake. I mean, weren't there any German girls around? I mean, he grew up in Hamburg, right?
Yes, but it said he traveled extensively in Central America, where he married, I think, one or two of the Jews, and then he went back to Vienna and married another Jew there. That's definitely, it warrants further investigation. Very odd. It is possible, as you said, that he could have just been another self-hating Jew, you know, a demon who's at war with demons.
Well, that's odd, because he doesn't claim to be a Jew here, and he has no reason to hide it. Is this a prototype for the protocols if he's a Jew? Right? I mean, but he's not really espousing ideas which we see as traditionally Jewish, such as the destruction of Christianity, the destruction of monarchy. He's really not rooting for those ideas.
It says here that he published in Hamburg a final essay entitled Testament of an Anti-Semite, in which he explained the history of his thinking, asserting that he had originally been a philo-Semite, having rejected the miserable romantic madness of Germanism, and he begged the Jews to pardon him.
Wow, maybe he's a proto-evangelical. Okay, I'd like to read the last two paragraphs from the chapter 3 before we proceed with chapter 4, right? Well, we see that Marr explains that an already de facto existing foreign rule, meaning Jewish rule, was legally recognized in Germany, a foreign rule which, to express it in commonplace terms, had gotten so far as to have seized dictatorial control of the state's financial system. This is 30 years after the Revolution of 1848, right? That is, of the nervous rerum gerundarum, or nerve center of business activity, and had imbued it with the Jewish spirit of arranging and manipulating. Isn't Wall Street today like legalized arranging and manipulating? There's no doubt in my mind. What Jewry had secured long ago, the domination of Jewish realism at the expense of all idealism, was now not only to be safeguarded but expanded beyond all bounds. To this end, Jewry needed equal rights in creating laws and administrating the very same state which it negated on religious grounds. He's admitting that Jewry is absolutely hostile to the German state, yet they want to control it, right? This and nothing else is the core content of Jewish emancipation. Once all catchy phrases have been peeled away, Jewish foreign rule entered the sphere of Germanic statecraft in an absolute way. I am using repeatedly the word foreign rule, but as a people, which every year repeats, among other things, the ritual silly phrase, "See you next year in Jerusalem," not a foreign people, it bluntly affirms its foreign character, not to speak of its customs and persistent tribal characteristics, which, neither in spirit nor in substance, have, except in the most exceptional and rare instances, been assimilated in an indistinguishable way into Germanism over a span of 1,800 years. Can the Jews afford or really wish to diminish the image of their own power by faking the attempt not to appear as distinct aliens? The very glory, quote-unquote, of Judaism is precisely that it offered the Occident, the West, a most victorious resistance over a span of 1,800 years. All other immigration into Germany, i.e. the French colonies, disappeared. The Rhineland, the Saarland, is that what Alsace-Lorraine at that time? Because the Prussians did get that back from the French, right?
Yeah.
Disappeared without a trace within Germanism. Wends and Slavs disappeared in the German element. The Semitic race, stronger and tougher, has survived them all. Let me say that Tacitus couldn't make up his mind whether the Wends were actually Germanic or Sarmatian by race, right? He listed them as one or the other. He wasn't sure.
Is there a particularly important difference between the two?
Well, the major difference between the two was language, right?
I mean, aren't the Sarmatians essentially German?
Well, the Sarmatians are probably a mix of Scythian and Slavic tribes. It's hard to exactly determine. The Semitic race, stronger and tougher, has survived them all. Truly, were I a Jew, I don't know if you want to consider survival of the fittest, survival of the most perverse, right?
So survival of the
fittest
and bankers.
Well, right. Once your DNA is compromised, you're on their side now, and you're one of them. And of course, the mud will survive in a puddle of water. I mean, that's the way it is. The water will dry up and the mud will still be there. Wends and Slavs disappeared in the Germanic element. The Semitic race, stronger and tougher, has survived them all. Truly, were I a Jew, so he's denying the fact that he's a Jew, right? I would look upon this fact with my greatest pride. No victor of antiquity or modern times can pride himself of such spiritual, historical, cultural successes as the most humble Jewish peddler, shocker, Jude, who offers fabric from his car at a street corner without a stroke of the sword, peacefully, in spite of the political persecution over centuries. Judaism is today the political social dictator in Germany. And we've seen after the Great Depression and World War II and the cultural revolutions of the 50s and 60s here that Judaism is the political social dictator in America, right? It's the same pattern all over again. He asks, dictator of Germany only, in the land of thinkers and philosophers, Jewish emancipation dates from 1848. So we would count that from the French Revolution. He counts it from 1848. At the same time began the 30 Years' War. Now he's not talking about the famous 30 Years' War, which occurred in the 1600s, right? The Catholic-Protestant religious wars. He's talking about a war of revolutions openly carried on by Jewry, using the described armamentarium. And we read that. That's the series of social revolutions in Germany, the communist revolutions in Germany during the 1800s that Nesta Webster described, right?
Okay. And 3 decades of insurrection from 1848 to the 1870s.
Well, where Nesta Webster basically told us this was the work of the Masons and the Jesuits and the secret societies, and sometimes mentioned Jews in connection with it, Marr is just laying it right on the Jews. It was difficult to deny them these arms during a period of storm and stress, and after we had been more than half conquered over the centuries by Jewish intelligence, how about cunning, concerning elections, Jewry immediately entered a statistical contract with us to be Jewish helped to gain a mandate with relative ease. Isn't that the same guilt trip? You know, Marr is, he's a New England liberal. He's totally caved in to the poor, oppressed Jewish minority.
So he's basically justifying their usury and their banking by saying that they're oppressed and it's the only way they can fight back.
It seems to me he has the same disease that the American liberals of the last 4 or 5 of the last 10 decades have had. That we have to embrace our oppressors because we were so cruel to them in the past. It's the same disease. It was difficult to deny them these arms during a period of storm and stress, and after we had been more than half conquered over the centuries by Jewish intelligence. Concerning elections, Jewry immediately entered a statistical contract with us to be Jewish help to gain a mandate with relative ease. Yeah, you know, that's the way it is today. That's the way our political system is today. And during the 80s and 90s, everybody was wanting to be a Jew to win an election. Look at Hillary Clinton. To be... In order to garner the Jewish vote, the parties, when setting up lists of candidates, had to grant Jewry concessions, and this is what is going on to a greater or lesser extent until today. He's talking about until 1879, and it's really what's going on to a greater extent until today, 2010, right? That this is a whole picture of American history since World War II. Up to 1848, the Jews in Germany were predominantly of, quote-unquote, democratic conviction, or at least pretended to be. That's what we see these Jewish tyrants today. They pretend to be Democrats, the Nancy Pelosi's, the Harry Reid's, the Rahm Emanuel's. They really want to be tyrants.
Absolutely.
Later on, Jewry split into parliamentary parties, principally into national liberalism, because there, the spirit of Judaization, the concepts of utility and practicality, the lack of principles had progressed the most. They're the neocons, or they're the Democrats, I guess, right? And here it comes. So far, only the ultramontane party has remained free of Judaization. Conservative ruling parties, however, are teeming with Semitic elements because two-thirds of our semi-official literature are represented by Jews. There are your neocons, right? The same goal, disintegration of the Germanic state for the benefit of Jewish interests, is consistently pursued everywhere. And whether whether we get the Republicans in these last 50 years in America, or the Democrats in, who wins?
Well, it's Trotskyites versus Stalinists.
Well, right, and whichever party we have in, the Jews win. The daily press is predominantly in Jewish hands, which have transformed journalism into an object of speculation and industrial production, into a business with public opinion. Critique of theater, of art in general, is to three-quarters in the hands of Jews. Writing about politics and even religion is in Jewish hands. Let us think about it for a moment. Once emancipation had been won, instinct demanded that it be consolidated and reinforced. This could only be achieved by using the press and unionism. Consequently, Jewry flooded into both like high tide. It acted like it was extraordinarily intellectual and free of bias. It went as far as engaging in sarcastic irony of self. But while the highly gifted E. Dom offered the most precious jokes about Israel in Kladaradach, I guess that's the name of a a strip or a series or a column or something. It turned out that it was not advisable for a non-Jew to do the same.
Isn't that what we have in this country?
It's exactly what we have. It's the same thing all over again. It's the same exact pattern.
Sarah
politically,
Stolzman, she can say that Jews killed Jesus, but if we say that, we're haters.
Right. And she could brag about it and hope to do it again, right?
Using the word snob walk
suffice to accuse us Teutons of being religious haters. Well, at least my name protects me from such reproaches. I don't know what the significance of that is. From the very beginning of the emancipation, Judaism had been declared as a subject off limits for us Germans. There you have it. I mean, Americans can't criticize the Jews today, can they?
They can't even name the Jew.
No, if you even talk about them, people want to throw stones at you. After Jewish hustle and bustle had reduced journalism to a trivial but commercially successful enterprise directed at the mob's liking of gossip and scandal, it had found the largest possible audience for its attempts at Judaizing. Centuries of factual predominance of Jewish realism had done its preparatory work. Jewry dictated public opinion in the press, and they still do. But let us now look at the non plus ultra of arrogance of the Jewish victor, which is basically the de facto truth in 1879 Germany, right? The cultural struggle, quote-unquote, had begun. While we Germans had been banned and outlawed by the press since 1848, if we considered as much as criticism of anything Jewish, same situation we've been in today, Jewry now involved itself in our religious and cultural struggles with ultramontanism and, it is hard to believe, even did all the talking. Isn't that it's the same thing in Christianity today.
Not that hard to believe.
While Jewry searched anxiously to find for its satirical journals anything which they might ridicule as a quote-unquote Jewish witch hunt, it unleashed its torrents upon ultramontanism. Well, the later opposed Judaism in the battle for world domination. I think he's being sarcastic there, right? Here one may certainly not speak of Judaic tactfulness, which in turn demands from us that we treat it like delicate glass or like a mimosa pudica. I'm sorry, I don't quite know what that is. Some kind of flower, isn't it? And indeed, there were important newspapers in which we Germans were not even permitted to write about the culture struggle because we, in order to criticize the Roman fanaticism, had called it an emancipation of the Jehovistic fervor of the Old Testament. Here he goes, giving the Jews way too much credit again. In books such as by Johannes Scher, on the other hand, Jewry could not stand in the way of such political cultural deductions and analyses, but in its newspapers it even suppressed publications hostile to ultramontanism if Israel was ever touched upon so slightly. Just to try to comment upon Jewish rituals and statutes, you will find that not even the Pope is more infallible and unimpeachable. To comment upon their rituals is hatred, but if the Jew takes it upon himself to pronounce the last word in our religious and state affairs, then that is quite a different matter. And it's the same way today, isn't it? It's never changed. Jewry is already calling Vae Victis. Now, I know what that means. That means woe to the vanquished. While we are in the midst of our religious and political disputes, at the beginning of the cultural struggle, I and several of my friends attempted to take part in it by expressing views from a sophisticated historical cultural point of view. In vain. We were only allowed to be heard provided we renounced the use of basic statements of fact and if we were, ex abrupto, willing to be abusive of, quote-unquote, clerics. Not even under letters to the editor did we enjoy hospitality in the Jewish press. Even there, where there might have been an opportunity to express opinions contrary to ours, and this is the way Jewry has monopolized free expression of opinion in the press. And it's like that today.
They've done that today. They own the press.
Yes, absolutely. It would be easy to hide our own impotence under cover of an abundant verbiage of Jew hatred. We Germans have officially resigned in favor of Judaism in 1848. Check for yourself. In all aspects of life, the way to one's goal is subject to Jewish mediation. There is no struggle for existence without Jewry collecting its commission. Ask yourself, reader, whether I exaggerate. This is the result of the 30 years' war which Jewry has officially staged against us since 1848, and which does not even offer us the hope for a poor Westphalian peace. That's an allusion to some...
basically a Carthaginian peace, right?
It seems to me, yes, a peace that's at so great a cost that it's not worth having, right?
The one that ended the 30 Years' War, the Peace of Westphalia.
Okay, the real 30 Years' War.
Yes.
Do you want to continue with Chapter 5?
All right. There is no standing still. It is forward or back. Are there any signs that the Jewish twilight of gods is about to close in? Why do you think he uses the phrase gods instead of God? Is that just an allusion to Wagner?
I really have no idea because I don't understand the cultural context. That the Jewish twilight of gods, that maybe because the Jews believe that they are collectively God, they really don't have their own God, but I don't think that Marr knew that much about Jewry.
All right.
And it's obvious to me that he's really not a Jew, and he may have married Jewish women because of his liberal guilt trip that he's on. Yeah, you know, like white liberals today would marry Negro women just for the sake of feeling that they're making up to our oppression of Negroes by doing that, right?
I mean, it's odd, though. It says that he was married three times to Jewesses. He had a Jewish girlfriend when he was in school at Vienna. He was involved with a Polish Jew. He had a relationship with another Jew in Central America. He courted two Jews, ultimately married three. I mean, it's pretty ridiculous. You would think
if all that's true, and here he certainly seems not to be a Jew. I mean, he has no reason to hide it. Why would he write something like this and deny being a Jew if he were a Jew?
Good point. Are there any signs that the Jewish twilight of the gods is about to close in? No, there are none. The social and political dominance of Jewry, as well as its religious and ecclesiastic paternalism, are still full of youthful vigor and ready to achieve the Jehovah's promise. I shall deliver all the nations to thee, etc. A sudden reversal is impossible, if only for the reason that the entire social structure formed by Judaization would collapse and no concept exists to take its place and turn it into reality. I don't believe that's true, though. Since we had functioning, healthy societies before the Jews came into them and corrupted them, we could always return to those healthy, functioning societies, couldn't we?
Well, absolutely. I mean, the natural society of men is to collect with your kindred, watch out for them, and barter what you need. We don't need currency. We don't need Jewish fiat currency in order to hold the society. That's crazy. We lived for 2,000 years with no currency at all, or better.
They basically just interfere with the natural order, the natural process.
Yes, they do. That they do that by monetizing everything. They want to turn everything. They want to securitize the entire world. They would securitize oxygen. You would buy oxygen futures if it was up to the Jew. That they would want to do away with trees in order to drive up the price of oxygen.
Maybe they have some plans to do that, and that's why they're cutting down all the trees. Yet they blame the evil white man for destroying the planet. Neither can we look to the Christian state for assistance. Now, when he says Christian state, I assume he's talking about the Roman papacy.
It seems to me that he might be talking about the Hohenzollern monarchy, the Prussian monarchy.
All right. Neither can we look to the Christian state for assistance, for the Jews are the most perfect citizens of this modern Christian state, which in turn perfectly matches their interests. They are, and this is said without a hint of irony, the best and truest Reichsfreund, friends of the German Reich, because this Reich is quite ready to advance them to the highest office in the land. And that's why they were throwing their support behind the Hohenzollerns, right, the Prussians.
Absolutely. And we saw that in the page. We did see that properly in the pages of Nesta Webster. There was no doubt about it. She made no bones that the secret societies and the Jesuits, and she mentions the Jews where she has to probably, but nothing like Marr is attributing to them. And basically she explains it. They were behind the rise of the Russian monarch, the Prussian monarchy at the expense of all other German principalities, which they wanted to eliminate, because it's a lot easier to corrupt one big king than it is 50 little ones.
It's surprising, though, then, that they would play Prussia against Austria and wreck Austria, since Austria was the first monarchy, the Habsburgs in Austria, they were the first rulers that knighted and gave peerages and titles of nobility and estates to Jews.
It's always the Chavez Goy they get rid of first, right?
So they didn't need the Austrians anymore, since Austria was not nearly as industrialized and developed as the German states were. They wanted
The German states were a much larger host for the ticks to latch onto.
Just like they're doing with America and China, we have to be tossed by the wayside so they can all hop on board the new rising star.
Well, right. They see a billion people to take advantage of in China. We have nothing like it.
May I direct a plea to my readers? Please save this pamphlet of mine and provide in your will that it be passed from generation to generation. It is not a pretentious prophecy of mine, but a statement of my deepest conviction that within less than four generations, there will not be a single office in the land, including the highest, which will not have been usurped by the Jews.
Well, ultimately, that took two wars, but it happened, right?
And they've basically usurped every office in every nation and every country, haven't they?
Absolutely.
They've usurped the world. Yes, through Jewry, Germany will become a world power, an Occidental Palestine. Well, that never really happened. They went with America instead.
Well, you know why it never really happened? Adolf Hitler. That they were there in the Weimar Republic. They were just about there.
And if it hadn't been for Hitler, America would be a backwater, basically de facto colony of Europe, and Germany would be the colossus in Europe.
Well, right. We made a deal with the devil when we went to war against Germany, right?
Not through violent revolutions, but by the voice of the people itself. Just as soon as German society will have reached the apogee, of social bankruptcy, the apogee of helplessness towards which we are drifting. Let us not reproach the Jews on this account. Jewry has fought the Occident for 1,800 years, actually 6,000. It has conquered and subjected it. We are the vanquished, and it is quite in the order that the victor chants va victus. Our Germanic element has shown itself to be impotent, to be powerless, vis-a-vis foreign domination in a historical cultural context. This is a fact, a bitter, inexorable fact. The state, the church, Catholicism, Protestantism, credo, and dogma must bow before Jewish judgment in the daily press.
Well, that's because Catholicism and Protestantism never taught the truth about the Jew. They never had it. They never bothered to go looking for it.
A lot of the popes were Jews themselves.
Yes. Yes, but especially from the time of the crime family popes, the Borgias, the De Medicis.
I think it was Alexander IV who had something called the Banquet of Chestnuts, I believe it was, at the papacy. He would invite all the cardinals and all the bishops there, and then he would hire prostitutes and bring them into the Vatican, and the bishops and cardinals would spend the evening seeing which one of them could have sex with the most prostitutes in one night, and whoever won would get a bag of gold. Now, that had to be
Well, the only thing that would surprise me is if the prostitutes weren't male.
Now, that had to be a Jewish pope, wouldn't you say?
Well, I'm certain.
And I think that was in the 14th century or late 14th century, and Martin Luther ranted about it, as he should have. That should have had all of Christendom up in arms. But this, by far, is not all. After Germanism, Until then, a straggler in the Jewish question had stepped up front to head it. There was no longer any stopping. Okay, Simone and Crémieux were the dictators in France in 1870, 1871. Am I reading a footnote?
Yes, no. Yeah, yes, pick up from 1871 during the war and daily drove thousands upon thousands.
All right.
Right. It seems to be a fault in the PDF file.
Okay. Simone and Crémieux were the dictators in France in 1870, 1871 during the war and daily drove thousands upon thousands of Frenchmen needlessly to death after Sedan, that very bloody battle. Everybody believed peace would come. Not so. Bismarck would have been able to handle the phraseology of a Jules Favre, but the frivolous, miserable fanaticism of action of the Semitic gentlemen in Tours required more blood and iron. Poor Judaized France. In England, a German hater, the Semit d'Israeli, comme il faut, as is proper, keeps the question of war and peace in his waistcoat pocket. Now, at the time when Prussia went to war with France in 1871, France was fully Judaized by that point in time, weren't they?
Well, absolutely. I would believe so. I would have no problem believing that.
France was probably the most Judaized country in Europe. In 1870s France, they were pretty reminiscent of 1960s America, weren't they? They were a century ahead of us. Who really gained at the Congress of Berlin? From the bloodshed in the Orient, Jewry did. The Association Israelite was first in line. Romania was coerced to officially open floodgates to the corrosive influence of Semitism. As far as Russia is concerned, Jewry did not yet dare to make the same demand. This is yet to come. And, well, 1905 was the first blow, the major first blow against Russia. They were testing the waters. If the Russo-Japanese War had gone even more disastrously for Russia, they would have pushed that revolution for all it was worth.
I'm certain.
And he talks about Romania. We covered in Weeby that all those states in around 1910 to 1930 had a huge backlash against the Jews. Hungary, Bulgaria, Romania, and the Ukraine. That's why they brought the Soviets into those regions later on to put those people down and put them back in place.
And I think we could also say that the Russo-Japanese War and the Japanese financing by the Rothschilds against the Russians and the Jewish revolt in 1905 shows that the Rothschilds and the communists were really working hand in hand.
Absolutely, that they coordinated the war with the revolution. And had the Russian state been weaker, had the people not been able to put down that Jewish instigated revolt, we'd have had Bolshevism in 1905. And if that was the case, World War I might not have been necessary. And in Germany, who carried off the prize of raw material advantage? Jewry. Represented by a handful of Jewish bankers, Semitic brokers, we Germans got the abstract, imaginary result to be friends of the Reich, to console us with the Reich of dreams.
Well, isn't it the same thing today where America is, the Israelis over in Palestine are always called friends of America, the 51st state, that we have a special relationship. It's the same damn thing all over again.
Well,
the same exact pattern.
If they're the 51st state, why don't they pay taxes? Why don't they send troops to Iraq and Afghanistan? It seems our special relationship is we do the bending and they do the pudding. We bend over.
Well, that's the way it was in 1870s Germany, too, right?
We write the checks and they cash them. Who headed, in numerically overwhelming fashion, the horrid, socially destructive Gründerthum after the war? Jewry did. Stop, dear reader. Don't gnash your teeth in anger. You have no right to. Foreign rule has been thrust upon us. 1,800 years lasted the battle against Jewish domination, which hardly ever strayed from its biblical tradition. The Semitic people suffered unspeakably. Well, that's just an outright lie. All their suffering was the result of our outrage against them, our righteous indignation. They brought it upon themselves. You can't practice usury for thousands of years and then complain when people want to kill you. You have abused it rudely, but rarely did you fight it spiritually. Starting from modest beginnings, it outgrew you, it corrupted society in all of its aspects, squeezed all idealism out of it, occupies the most controlling influence in trade and daily life, penetrates ever more into public office, controls the theater, forms a social political front and has left almost nothing for you except raw labor, which it itself has always shunned. Here he says they've always shunned it, yet it's our fault that they're taking us over because we hated them. Well, if they always shun that kind of labor, shouldn't we hate them?
Jews well, well there's a dichotomy in his thought because of his belief, the false belief that these are the people of the Old Testament. And what he says about them out of one side of his mouth doesn't quite match what he says about them on the other hand, because they're not those people. And Christianity failed to defend itself against the Jew because Christians don't read their New Testament. That the only defense we have against the Jew is through a proper biblical Christianity. Because a proper biblical Christianity teaches us to excoriate the Jew, an absolute excoriation of the Jew. When we excoriate the Jew, he has no power over us.
And if this guy had read the Old Testament, he would know the people of the Old Testament were not bankers and pornographers. They were farmers for the most part and warriors.
Absolutely. And none of those traits belong to the Jew.
The Jews have no qualities necessary to build a civilization out of nothing. All they do is hijack a ready-made civilization. They can never build their own, can they?
Well, if the Old Testament was a Jewish book, it would be a banking manual.
And that's why the Jews have never been content to just be given land so they could go there and do what they want with it. The Russians gave them the Jewish Autonomous Oblast, didn't they? They set up an autonomous Jewish republic in Siberia, didn't they? And none of the Jews wanted to go there.
The Jew doesn't want to be a farmer. He doesn't want to build a society with his own hands. No way.
He wants to move into the city and become a banker and then corrupt white women in the pornography.
Absolutely.
It has transformed talent into shiny virtuosity, pimpish advertising into the goddess of public opinion, and rules you today. This sounds like present-day America.
Because it is present-day America. It's more like 60s or 70s America.
Or should Jewry not take advantage of its victory and triumph? The German people could, because it had received permission from above, get rid of French foreign rule, 1813-1814. Why has French domination not understood how to have its interests taken to heart by above, like Jewish domination has understood to accomplish this for itself? So what he's saying is that the Jews basically approved of the Germans shaking off the French.
Absolutely. That's what it truly seems to be saying.
Of course, high-minded individuals such as Schill, Dornberg, Stein, had been ostracized by Germanic monarchs, just as we might be ostracized for merely ascertaining the facts regarding Judaization. Are we willing to sacrifice? Did we succeed in creating even a single anti-Jewish leaning paper, which manages to be politically neutral?
Do we have one of those today? Do we have one of those today?
I don't think there's any kind of anti-Jewish paper, even if it's not politically neutral.
And when's the last anti-Jewish paper? The 1800s? Did we ever have one? I don't think
maybe
we ever had one.
Father Coughlin.
Perhaps. Okay. That's just to show the example of how we are. We're in the exact same position and have been for a long time.
Are not even our homemakers and similar associations under patronage of Jewesses, who combine the agreeable with the profitable and corner a little business on the side? I'm guessing he's talking about prostitution.
Absolutely.
Isn't every nook and cranny of our life subject to the flood of Judaism? You rest yourself on Germanic bearhide. I marvel in admiration at this Semitic people, which put its heel onto the nape of our necks. So he would say that he hasn't read the scripture, yet he knows that their foot is on the nape of our neck. Or is he just using a typical cultural phrase?
Well, it's probably a typical cultural phrase that and much of the cultural language actually came from the Bible, right?
I gather the last remnant of my strength to die as peacefully as possible in Jewish bondage, but as one who has not surrendered and is not willing to ask for pardon. But supposedly he did that at the end of his life.
Right.
The Jews are to be believed. And they're probably not. Can we deny historical facts? We can't. The historical fact that Judaism has become the leading political, social great power of the 19th century is clearly before our eyes. To de-Judaize ourselves, for that we clearly lack physical and spiritual strength. The raw, brute force, but completely subconscious protest against the actual Judaization was social democracy. He thinks that social democracy was a protest against Jewry? Wow.
Yeah, well, it seems to be, but social democracy was really a sort of Jewry for the Goyim, right?
Social democracy was basically a toned-down version of Bolshevism to make it more palatable for the Goyish masses. You know, they bring out the communist who says, burn down society and kill all the bosses and managers and landowners, and people recoil in horror thinking, wow, that brute. Then they bring out the clean-cut, well-pressed Jew who articulately describes social democracy and the legitimate concerns and aspirations of the workers and the proletariat. They think, wow, this guy's not so bad. He makes some sense. Isn't how they always do it, good cop, bad cop?
Well, it seems to be a pattern they often follow.
The raw, brute force, but completely subconscious protest against the actual Judaization was social democracy, which acted with and for the Jews, because Jewry had infiltrated its ranks as well, just as the founder of German social democracy, LaSalle, had been a Semite himself. And I would say that social democracy wasn't infiltrated by the Jews, it was invented by them. Why, therefore, should we now be surprised? We harbor a resilient, tough, intelligent foreign tribe among us who knows how to take advantage of every form of abstract reality. It is not the individual Jew. It is Jewish spirit and Jewish awareness which have taken over the world. No longer can we speak of a persecution of Jews when the howls of German persecution may be heard as soon as a non-Jew dares to rear his head. These are all historical cultural facts, so unique in their aspects, so awesome, that it is impossible to dispute them using everyday polemics. The proud Roman Empire has not been able to win such triumphs with all the might of its arms, as has typical Semitism won in the Occident and particularly in Germany. Among all the European states, only Russia is left to still resist the Frank foreign invasion. And that's why they had to take Russia down with first the 1905 Russo-Japanese War, which the Rothschilds financed the building up of Japan in preparation for that war, the revolution that came that same year, and then, of course, World War I and the uprising in 1917-1918. The most recent example of coming action against this last bulwark was set by Jewry in the case of Romania. As current events and circumstances indicate, the final surrender of Russia is only a question of time. Well, Russia didn't surrender. They were torn to shreds from within.
Well, right, but Mar was saying it would happen 40 years before it happened, right?
If Russia had surrendered, there wouldn't have been a Bolshevik revolution, but 1890s Russia would have looked a lot like 1970s America, and the Tsar's grandchildren would have been mulattoes.
Well, I was going to say, if America did not surrender to the Jew in the 40s, 50s, and 60s, then we would have had a Bolshevik revolution here, or a war with Russia, one or the other.
We'd be living in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, heavily irradiated.
Absolutely. That was never necessary, because we rolled over and said, take me,
my darling. Oppenheimer said that he had become death, the destroyer of worlds. Was that Oppenheimer who said that? When they detonated the first atomic bomb at the test site in Los Alamos?
I'm not positive.
It occurred to me that would be pretty much in keeping with what Maurice Samuel said. We Jews are destroyers and will remain destroyers.
Right, but I'm not sure if Oppenheimer really said that.
In this multifaceted, huge state, Jewry will find the cardinal point which it needs to completely unhinge the Western world. Jewish, resilient, fly-by-night attitude will plunge Russia into a revolution like the world might never have seen before. Social nihilism and abstract individualism will be conjured up in such a way that the only half-civilized Tsarist empire will be unable to resist. the underdeveloped, still in swaddling clothes, living or already under Jewish influence, corrupted administration will offer a suitable handle. Just look at the multinational Austria to see how solidly and irreversibly she is in Jewish hands today. And that's why Hitler hated the Habsburgs. They ruined Austria.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did hate them for that. And they ruined Austria, and they rejected their own German people in favor of the Slavs time and again, right?
They were basically whores for the Jew.
And Hitler really despised the Slavs for that reason.
How and where might these partially primitive national elements in Russia be more resistant than we Germans are and were when the exemplary, well-administrated, and stalwart Prussia, with its honest and modern Hohenzollern, with its disciplined population, has already been breached by Jewry? Are we not witnessing today that under the gentle and humane Tsar Alexander, who had abolished serfdom, has abolished serfdom, it is nihilism which flourishes? That's pretty ridiculous, isn't it? The Tsar frees them, and all of a sudden the people take on nihilism, which is a gutter ideology.
Absolutely.
I mean, if you had to sum up nihilism, how would you sum it up?
Well, nihil means nothing, right? It's the destruction of society. It's anarchy.
So it's basically the ideology of destruction coming from the minds of the destroyers.
Right, absolutely. But the Tsar, you know, the Tsar compromised. As soon as you compromise with Satan, you're on your way down.
And Russia is to offer resistance against the social nihilism which Jewry has imported into the Occident. This is impossible. With Russia, Jewry will have captured the last strategic position from which it has to fear a possible attack on its rear, but once it has paralyzed Russia, its rear will be perfectly secure. After it has invaded Russia's offices and agencies the same way it did ours, then the collapse of our Western society will begin in earnest, openly, and in Jewish fashion. The last hour of doomed Europa will strike at the latest in 100 to 150 years, since events develop more rapidly now than they did in past centuries. And isn't that essentially what happened? Hitler was a speed bump, but now they're openly bringing in tens of millions of foreigners into Europe. Some immigration expert said they need at least 50 million Africans to come into Europe on EU visas to be seasonal workers who will do occasional work in the spring and in the winter and then go back to Africa for the remainder of the
no,
year.
No, that ain't going to happen. They do occasional work and they're on welfare 11 and a half months, right?
Well,
that's what really happens.
Drug dealing's a dirty business. Someone's got to do it or the police would be out of work. What Russia may expect from Judaism is clear. With exception of two or three platonically neutral Jewish papers, the entire Jewish daily press has frenziedly taken the side of Asia against Russia in the Russian-Turkish War. He's probably referring to the Crimean War?
Yes, he must be. It's just a different perspective, right?
Neither the religious aspect of this war, as secondary in importance as it may have been, nor, and this is the important point, the historical cultural idea, which stands above all diplomacy, the memory of the centuries, even millenniums of struggle against Asia, not even the Hellenistic tradition, were able to convince the Jewish press to adopt a more sophisticated attitude. So he's saying that they're siding against Russia just because they hate Russia and they hate the West that much.
Right. Absolutely.
Well, why wouldn't they?
And the Hellenistic tradition, I think, was the endeavor to free Greece from the Turks, right?
Yes. Although the Jews were never really oppressed in Asia, and they're cousins to the Turks. And we really can't expect Mara to know that, can we?
Well, he should have known that the Jews had a hell of a nice time with the Turks in under the Khazar Empire for 400 years until the invasions of the Mongols, right?
Certainly, this press would have stood beside Russia if a Lasker or Bomberger had played politically the first fiddle on the shores of the River Neva, or if Jewry had financially been more important in Russia than in Turkey. But instead, a howling self-interest emerged from every anti-Russian newspaper article. La guerra como la guerra. One must take things as they come. It was a right for the Jews, because they are aliens and have been forced to wage war against us. And with that, I only state a fact. Cine Era et Studio, Which Side Should I Be On?, was and can be heard whenever Jews consider partisanship. They are more toujours en vendite, always on the lookout, than the entire Occident is. Why does he have to keep rotating between, you know, Spanish, Latin, and French?
Right, but that la guerre, come la, a la guerre, that seems to me to mean, war comes with war. With war comes war.
Guerre means war. It doesn't mean thing.
Yeah, right. So one must take things as they come. I don't know. I could be wrong. I mean...
Just as we fared in the question of the cultural struggle, we also fared in the Oriental question. Any opinion deviating from the Judaic position found no space in the Jewish dailies, which had almost completely taken sides for Jewish industrial interests. In the German press, earnestness and satire blindly took the side of a disintegrating financially in Jewish clutches, languishing Turkey. Securities speculation determined what public opinion should be. Doesn't that happen today?
I'm sorry, I'm trying to define this phrase.
Oh, well, it just seems reminiscent of the whole Iraq war. That was basically a corporate endeavor. In addition,
absolutely.
Russia stumbled into the war without any spiritual preparation, without having sought even a shadow of public opinion for herself, and allowed the idea to take hold that she was driven by a titillating desire for conquest and not by its mission in the Orient. The thought that implicitly the insolence of the great sea power, England, might be curbed and that stating this idea would have yielded many friends for Russia was never expressed, and so England became the ally of Judaism. Well, the English were financed, I heard, by Nathan Rothschild at a tune of £80 million to prepare for the Crimean War. So the Crimean War was a Jewish-instigated and contrived war from the get-go. They pushed the British and French into backing the Turks when really the British and French should have either sat it out or supported the Russians. It has always been a misfortune for the Slavs that they ignored the spirit of Germanism and judged it solely on the basis of Jewish newspaper reports. Good God, the German spirit is about to become a stranger even in the German press. I'd say at this point in time, no such thing as the German press existed. It was just the Jewish press in Germany.
He's already said that the Jews dominated and owned most of the press. A la guerre, come a la guerre means make do with what you have, do what you have to do. It's French. I don't understand French, and I shouldn't pretend to.
Right. I thought it was Spanish when I first saw it. It will not even be 10 years, and one will not be able to find a single journalist in all of Germany who has not been circumcised. At most, clerks for hire will be found rendering service in the industry of the Jewish press. And even that will be quite in order, a la guerre comme a la guerre. And prisoners of war must dig trenches. I'm guessing he's saying they're all going to be shot. I am not entitled to, and this is hardly the place to criticize the interior policies of Count Bismarck since 1866. He's saying that he's not legally allowed to.
I am not entitled to. I'm not sure what the law was for criticizing the government in Germany at this period. Evidently, he's saying that he can't, but...
Suffice it to say that since then, his honor, the Count, is worshipped by Jewry like Constantine, and that the national liberal Jewish opposition quite openly pushes for power, which the Count should grant it presently. The Jews worship Constantine? That's news to me. I can't say that this Jewish expectation is ridiculous. The foundation of our interior politics have, since the war with Austria, and even more so since the war with France, been such that the boldest Jewish aspirations could not be considered ridiculous. How come? France had within the last 7 years one Jewish dictator and one Jewish triumvirate. Who's he referring to the dictator as? Louis Blanc?
Well, that's possible. I'm not positive.
All right. Who would the triumvirate be?
One Jewish... He must be referring to the the usurpers during the 1848 revolution, right?
Mm.
Or the 1871 revolution.
Yes. In Germany, the social El Dorado of Jewry should not be capable to swim with the current. It would be rather laughable should Jewry reduce its expectations by even half a tone, if I, as a German and one of the vanquished, am not to criticize the interior policies of Count Bismarck, then I would, if I were a Jew, say the Count understands his era as no other statesman before him. He has the clear historical cultural insight that Germanism is bankrupt and in its last gasps, and he is casting out for elements with more vitality. So basically they're saying that Bismarck's a whore for the Jew.
Yeah, France was ruled by a triumvirate during the 1871 revolution.
You know who they were?
Montmartre, Belleville, and La Vallée.
Jews with French names, then.
Yeah, right. I'm looking at Marxists.org, right? I don't think that Nesta Webster actually named them all by name.
All right.
Go on.
How can men be of use to him? Men like us, who can no longer be Reichsfreunde because we don't have a Reich, and don't ask the Count for more than approved space for a small and quiet community, which has not yet lost all ideals. Would you like to take over for chapter 6?
The 1800 years war with Judaism is nearing its end. Right. It is. It still is. Let us admit openly and without reserve, Germanism has suffered its sedan. We have lost our armies and must not fight on like Gambetta wanted to. We must not carry on as Frank Tureur's. We have been vanquished in open battle. Yes, in open battle, because Jewry has always shown its true face and their little falsehood that we acted like religious fanatics when we offered resistance must be forgiven. He's all for caving into the Jews and rolling over and playing dead, right? I mean, I don't think he understood that the prophecy in Revelation that tells us today that this could not be helped, that our kingdom would be handed over to the beast, and this is part of that. But I think that we shouldn't like it, right? We shouldn't just cede to evil. We are no longer a match for this foreign tribe. Move on, and don't try to convince me otherwise. With the rude hep-hep of the mob, with the pyre and other similar ruses, nothing is accomplished. We never worked on liberating ourselves spiritually from unyielding Jewish realism. Intellectually, we accomplished nothing because we were too sluggish and too miserly to battle the Jewish speculative spirit in the press. Don't complain, therefore, about a scandal press, which is bought, read, and supported by your funds. And he's right there. What we support this media today, we buy newspapers, we watch the televisions, we support the advertisers, and we complain about the media. He's right. We have no right to complain about the media because we support it.
People complain that their daughters are turning the whores, but they send them to public school and they let them go watch the Jewish movies.
Right. Absolutely. So don't complain about the result. That's the dead truth. We've engaged and bought all these products from the Jews, so we deserve the punishment. That's just the way it is. If we keep sending our kids to Jewish movies and they get programmed with Jewish ideals, how could we complain about that?
If I sell you a bottle of strychnine, you take it home and drink it, and then you're getting sick and you're dying, who can you blame? I didn't make you drink the strychnine.
Well, I think I said a few weeks ago, if you sit every Sunday worshiping Negroes playing sports on TV, and then your daughter brings one home after 20 years of watching you do that, how could you possibly object to that? She only brought you home one of your idols, and now he's your son-in-law.
Mm.
How could you object to that? You've set the pattern. You've set the example. You can't object to that. Not without being a hypocrite. The bottom line is you shouldn't have been worshiping Negroes on TV for 20 years. Don't be disdainful of yourself if you see your image in a mirror. Stop to be loudmouths when you are the vanquished. The future and life belongs to Judaism. Germany is of the past and will die. He didn't have a very bright outlook for Germans under Judaism, did he? This is the meaning of the historical cultural development of our German people. There is no way to fight this iron law of world order. Well, you know, Hitler had vanquished the Jews in Germany. He just couldn't vanquish the Jews in America and Britain too, right? From the very beginning, it was not a religious war. It was a battle for survival against the foreign rule of Judaism, of whose character we only now have become clearly aware. Well, let me say that we have still no idea of the character of Judaism, we as a people. It is too late. We have been so thoroughly submerged in Judaism that all of modern society would have to be put in question if we wanted to forcefully emerge again. In addition, we lack allies which might assist us in the peaceful and deliberate emancipation of Germanism. There are no allies among the nobility. We have that situation today. None among the statesmen, and none even among the people itself. The historical cultural bankruptcy of the Occident and of Germanism in particular appears to advance relentlessly. You may call it pessimism, which speaks through me, yet it is page for page the entire history of culture which I adduce, which has led us with demonic logic into Judaism. I repeat and believe that in these days of easy suspicions against those of a different frame of mind, one can't repeat often enough. I do not harbor the least hatred of the Jews. I do not hate the Jews for their religion. I have no hatred based on national origin or race. No people can be blamed for its special gifts. Events of the world and culture history have hurled Judaism into the Occident. The later encountered a foreign element in Judaism, just as it appeared alien to the just as it itself appeared alien to the newcomer. There started to be friction between the two people, and in the process, Judaism proved stronger than the Occident, and especially stronger than Germanism. It would be a comment. Well, that's because the German Church was usurped by usurious Jews, right? And the German nobility. It would be a commendable task for a German scientist, provided he can spare the time, to expand this short but penetrating study of mine into a scientific work and to trace step by step the progress which Judaism has made in historical political respects in Germany. This might be a work worthy of our greatest cultural historian, Johann Scher. Now, I admit that at one time I have fiercely polemicized against the Jews. But I recognize my error. My polemic was an error. It came centuries too late. I do not harbor the least animosity towards the Jews, provided they don't harm me, and if I harbor such hate, then of course only to personal enemies. That I, just as so many other writers and other fellow humans have suffered on account of the Judaization of my profession, is in the nature of things. It is like war. How can I hate the soldier whose bullet happens to hit me? Does one not offer one's hand as a victor as well as a prisoner of war? Are we to be more barbaric than a soldier in war? In my eyes, it is an honest war which has been going on for 1,800 years. And he doesn't realize it's really been going on for 7,500 years.
Sure.
Over there and over here, we did not want to admit this fact because we had been doctrinaire on both sides and never grasped the essence of this historical cultural battle. The Jew, I am speaking in general here, demonstrates quite admirable attributes towards his own. Some, within his family, for example, allow for more intimacy than one finds among other people. He may be kind and agreeable with us superficially. The fact of an awareness within him of belonging to the quote-unquote chosen people, the fact that he hates us or views us as mere objects of exploitation, arises from the nature of his tribe and from his history and antiquity. Yeah, they were Canaanites. It is understandable that he does not regard us with kindness, given the reception he has received in the Occident. He would not, or he could not, assimilate, and so he had to fight. Following his first decisive victory of 1848, he had to, whether he wanted to or not, pursue his success further and must now attempt to ruin the Germanic Occidental world. The destructive mission of Judaism, which already existed in antiquity, will only come to a halt once it has reached its culmination, that is after Jewish Caesarism has been installed. From which quarters may one expect resistance? Certainly not from Germanism, because it lies in mortal agony. Perhaps, but only conditionally so, the Slavs may come to the force of the stage on which the great tragic comedy of world history is being played out. It is easier to provide an illustration of what our current generation will likely have to experience, because, provided not all indications fail us, Jewry will have to face a final, desperate assault, particularly by Germanism, before it will achieve authoritarian dominance. Now, Mars indicated at the end of the last chapter that the Slavs might play a role in confronting Judaism, and they did try that, right? Remember that in the 1930s? That there was a lot of Slavic uprising against Jews in Eastern Europe, but they were destroyed and turned over to the Bolsheviks after World War II, right?
Absolutely. The Cossacks were betrayed. Everyone was betrayed. Yet Churchill portrayed himself as a nationalist.
Right. The Jewish question is of a political social nature. I would say it's certainly of a racial nature. The Judaization of the Germanic world has created concepts and theories of individual social freedom. Here we go, the 1960s in America, right? Which can no longer be described as freedom, but only as insolence. Its practical consequences have become intolerable to even Judaized Germanism. The opposition against usury is the first popular expression of the coming clash. One looks into an abyss of moral corruption if one sees in the press the daily more numerous offers for investment bargains, invitations extended to people with a little capital to participate in Lombard deals, guaranteed to yield 20 to 30% per month. Some of these fund negotiators may be hidden agents of larger capitalists. Others may be enticing the lesser capitalists to lead a comfortable life as rentiers by turning them into leeches of poverty and misery. This is worse than graft, because graft exploits only the stupid, while usury, by satanically enticing third parties to join, exploits poverty and misery. In our parliaments, where the topic of usury is paraded about as of burning importance, one can, as usual, only hear twaddle. The dogma of individual freedom, which really stands for the impertinence and gall of the most unbridled avarice, has become such a basic tenet of society that our valiant representatives, what a despicable picture they offer, attempt to make an omelet without breaking the egg. Why? One might also have to curb the unbridled manipulations of big industry and of big capital, and this is the reason why the question of usury remains without practical response and does not advance beyond theoretical resolutions. The doctrinarism of our Judaized society is an aid in getting around the cliff of usury. The impoverished members of every layer of our society remain victims of usury and of its corrupted German helpers, who, with the help of the Jews, would love to make 20 to 30% per month from the hardship and misery of the poor, if in the face of such official toleration, they would at least not importune us to show respect for the Christian Germanic state. It may be possible, but it won't work. That will be the end of the parliamentary filibuster regarding the problem of usury. In the meantime, the cancer of usury spreads even farther in society. The inner bitterness against Jews increases from hour to hour, exactly as in the Middle Ages under similar but less grandiose circumstances, and an explosion is inevitable. So Mar considered and recognized usury as a cancer. Well, which is much to his credit. It's probably the best thing he said yet.
The German helpers are just the hypocritical Germans who hate the Jews, and they rant about the Jews, but they want to profit from usury along with the Jews.
Well, right. Just like a lot of Americans do the same thing and invest in stock markets and bond markets and the, play the usury game with them here. One must also keep in mind that Count Bismarck, with his custom and tax initiatives, has alienated the better part of his most faithful Jews, because the Golden International knows no fatherland, just as the Black and Red Internationals don't. The 7 meager years which the German Reich has had for us Germans since 1871 threaten Jewry now as well, and His Excellency will soon find out how quickly matters of money, the patience in matters of money, the patience of his Semitic protégés will run short. The German state is disintegrating in the most rapid fashion, and once the explosion which we foresee occurs, then the state will have no good reason to protect the Jews from the ardor civicum. The anger of the people, I guess. How so often before in history, the violent hep-hep will become the safety valve for the state. Perhaps the time is not far away when we, the Jew-haters, par excellence, will have to protect the Semitic aliens who have vanquished us from the outrage of indignant popular passion. Such a catastrophe lies ahead. Well, he foresaw a backlash against the Jews, right? It just didn't happen until the 1930s. Such a catastrophe lies ahead because the indignation against the Judaization of society is intensified by the fact that it can't be ventilated in the press without showing itself as the most abstruse religious hatred, such as it surfaces in the ultramontane and generally in the reactionary press. We have been silenced to such an extent that we can't, even in the press, appeal to the human ethical sentiment of the Jews. We may rail against Rome and crack jokes about it. The same applies to Protestantism. All of this is received with hospitality in the Judaized press, just like today. The cause of humanitarianism, vis-a-vis abstract individualism, must not be presented. Germanic indolence, Germanic stinginess, convenient Teutonic disdainfulness of expression, are responsible that the agile and clever Israel now decides what one shall say and what not. Political correctness in the 1870s, right? I ask of you, do not berate the Jews. You vote for their foreign rule in your parliaments. You make them into legislators and judges. You elevate them to become dictators of your state's finances. You have turned the press over to them because you find brilliant frivolity more to your liking than moral fortitude. What is it that you rather want? The Jewish people thrive because of their talents, and you have been vanquished, as you should have been, and as you have deserved a thousandfold. He's basically saying it's the fault of the German people that they elevated the Jews to the point where the Jews can become tyrannical dictators over the Germans. And it's the same thing here in America over again. Neither must you say that the Jews spoil the price. They seize dizzyingly large-scale industrial overproduction, sell at rock-bottom prices, make money and use it in usury. This is not entirely in good order and in agreement with the dogma of abstract individualism, which you have accepted with enthusiasm from the hands of Judaism. We are so struck in Judaization that nothing will be able to save us, and that a violent anti-Jewish explosion will only delay, but not avert, the disintegration of Judaized society. You will no longer be able to halt the great Jewish mission. Jewish Caesarism is only, and I repeat this from a deep inner conviction, a question of time. Only after the Caesarism has reached its apogee may we perhaps be saved by a nameless God, in whose honor the Caesarian Roman Empire had built altars, in a semi-ironical, semi-foreboding mood.
All right. And it looks like there is an epilogue. Do we need to read his epilogue, you think?
Yeah, I would read the epilogue.
All right. Shall I do that?
Be my guest.
I have come to the end of my draft of historical cultural history. Those of fair judgment will forgive the expression of pain which I feel when I face the Judaization of my fatherland and acknowledge at the same time that I only adduced facts fairly and truthfully and have not flattered the German people at the expense of Jewry. Well, he certainly hasn't done that.
Well, no, but he's been objected. The end of this, yeah, you know, the beginning of it is poisoned because of his lack of a knowledge of the Bible and the true history of the origin of the Jew. But the end of this has been very good in explaining the problem is with the German people who have embraced and elevated the Jews. So why wouldn't they? I mean, when the sheep elect a wolf as president, what would you expect to happen? When the sheep bring the wolves into the sheepfold and elevate them over all the sheep, what would you expect to happen? The wolves vote for which sheep they eat. That's democracy.
Should I have offended the Jews by showing them as well were the logic of Judaization has led us and still is about to lead us? Let me say that I had no choice. The victor can't demand from the vanquished that he humbly offer incense. It is exclusively a historical cultural process of friction which took place between two different tribes as I have described it. I should think that this one time the Jewish press ought to make an exception and without loss of face treat a pamphlet which is not to their liking fairly. Well, they've never done that and they never will.
Absolutely.
I'm aware that my journalist friends and I stand defenseless before Jewry. Most of his journalist friends are probably Jews themselves.
Probably.
We have no patronage among the nobility or the middle class. Our German people are too Judaized to have the will for self-preservation. It is therefore time to finally state sans phrase, without qualification, the fact that we are the vanquished and are now subservient. Well, weren't we told that the kingdom will be taken and given over to the beast?
Well, yes, and this is the process in which that happens. The revolution of 1848, the revolution, the French Revolution, the revolution of 1871, that was all an aspect of the process of our kingdom being given over to the beast. It culminated in 1913 here, and that cemented the Anglo world for the beast. And Germany, like you said, Hitler was a bump in the road, and he was run over, right?
By the entire world.
And Germany has been assured to the beast ever since.
But it had to take the entire world. The Jews used the entire world, basically, to go after Germany and five or six other countries.
Absolutely.
I make this admission to definitively lift the fog of abstraction and partisanship from the Jewish question. Yes, I am sure that I have said what millions of Jews are quietly thinking. Well, they've been rubbing their hands together for some time, haven't they? Thinking about this, how they vanquished us.
No doubt that we are witnessing now the full bloom of the fig tree, and Christ said that when you see that fig tree in full bloom, you know that your deliverance is near. I don't see how the tares could hold their heads up any higher.
They own the world,
and they brag about it, and they do what they want with it.
That evangelical Christians think that Christianity's taken over the world because there are millions of churches now all across the globe. It's ridiculous. World power belongs to Semitism. Well, of course, we know that they're not Semites.
Right.
Speak therefore openly as well, you Jews. Be open and sincere in your thinking. You do have the power to do so, and we shall no longer complain. No hypocrisy between us. And in the last several decades, they've been pretty open, haven't they?
Well, yeah, they have been open, but he's thinking that we could teach the wolves to act like sheep.
A world historic destiny, that is what I would call it, has placed us like gladiators into the arena of cultural history. The battle had to be fought without hatred against the individual combatant who was forced into the role of attacker or defender. Tougher and more persistent than we, you became victorious in this battle between people, which you fought without the sword while we massacred and burned you. but did not muster the moral strength to tell you to live and deal among your own. In our medieval mentality, we thought we could manipulate you, and we were manipulated instead. Well, if you dance with the devil, you never lead, do you? You always get led.
Well, absolutely. And they should have never been trying to let the Jews live among these people. It's the noble classes, though, that were weak and brought the Jews in to think that they could use them to their benefit.
Instead of letting the Jews live in a ghetto in Prussia or Poland, you tell them, there's the border, start walking. If we see you again, we're going to kill you.
Absolutely. I mean, Vlad the Impaler is one of the real heroes of history.
Maybe that your realistic view of world and life is the true one. Maybe that destiny intends to make us your helots. We are already on our way. And that's what their Talmud teaches, that we should all be slaves to them.
Right. The helots were the Greek slaves to the Spartans. When the Dorians, I should say, right? Sparta was a city that was there from before the Dorian conquest. After the Dorian conquest of the Peloponnese, and Sparta was taken over by Dorians, the people that lived in the cities, in the villages and towns around about, became that they were allowed to stay there under the agreement that they were slaves, basically, to the Spartans. They were the helots. They were slaves for the Spartans.
Possibly the spirit which you brought with you to the Occident, into which high and low genuflex, socially and politically, is the only one which will assure German hegemony forever. An individual Teuton can't answer these questions today with a yes or a no, but you may look down upon us with justifiable pride. Don't dare to think of my words as irony. I solemnly protest. I have torn the veil from the Semitic image of Sais, and I am firmly looking at awesome Isis, because I don't deny her power. The unveiled image offers no new message. Admit that no enemy has more decently, more approvingly treated you than I have done. I, who personally have lived a life full of reasons to hate you, as so many, many among you know. But one no longer hates if one has become aware. Bakup savior sayes bakup pardonner. To know much is to forgive much, says Voltaire. And I know that you are the victors, and I'm sure I butchered that. Am I not asking your clemency? No, I'm not. I wish nothing of you but respect for my convictions. Well, you'll never get that. If you don't agree with the Jews, they're never going to respect you, and they won't respect you anyway.
They don't respect you when you do agree. You're a shabbat. You're just one of their whores. That's basically all you are.
I may have erred. It might be that Semitism and Germanism will enter a political social peace. I just don't believe in such a peace. I only believe what I see, our social political subjugation by you. But instead of boastfully rattling the chains, as is done by many, I admit that we have been fettered hand and foot, heart and soul, from palace to hovel. In place of the passion of battle, I have adopted stoic resignation. If you can't help it, take it out on me, the stoic, and do it cheaply. But don't speak of religion or race hate. It is the sorrow of a subjugated people which speaks through my writing, of a people which grieves under your reign, just as you have grieved under our reign, a reign which you have abolished step by step with time. The twilight of the gods has come upon us. You are the masters, we are the slaves. What is there left to us? Are we to surrender to Rome? Are we to go to Canossa and put all of our science at the disposal of the papacy? What would mean even greater humiliation than Luther suffered in Worms? Are we to ally us with founding Protestants and feign religious hatred on one side or the other? That is out of the question as well. The liberal daily press is also off limits because you knew how to monopolize it. Yes, holy freedom itself has become a Jewish monopoly. Freedom has to adhere to political, social, Jewish dogma. And isn't that the case today?
Americans, absolutely.
We thump our chests and say we're the freest people in the world, but we can't even say the word Jew. And I think it is my duty to absolve even my publisher of any moral responsibility for this pamphlet, for this pronouncement of resignation, to save him from the vindictiveness of the Jewish victor. And I'm sure they ruined his publisher. A voice in the desert has been raised and has merely stated facts, incontrovertible facts. Let us accept the inescapable, since we can't change it. Its name is Finis Germani. That appears to be the end.
The End of Germany. He's making a play on words there.
It's also the end of the pamphlet. You have any?
Yes, it is. Well, that's Wilhelm Marr. And while some of it was very bad, some of it was very good, but the end result was that he foresaw the triumph of Judaism over Germany. And it was inevitable. And it happened in the Weimar Republic, except that Adolf Hitler was able to rise up and try to stop it.
And had it not been for Hitler, the whole world would look like it does today, except probably 80 years ago.
Right. There's no doubt. The Soviets would have rolled right through all of Europe in under Stalin by 1940.
Now the greatest generation can pat themselves on the back, though, knowing that they saved the world for freedom and democracy.
Right. The freedom of the Jew and the democracy of the devil.
There were some British veterans from World War II a few years ago saying that this isn't the Britain they fought for, talking about how their country's full of Muslims and how the women are all skanks and how the country's falling apart and it has socialism. Well, absolutely, that is the Britain they fought for.
Yes, it is, because they fought, they signed a deal with the devil. And that's never going to get you anywhere, right?
Absolutely. So they have the Britain that they fought for. They could have had a better Britain, but they picked the wrong side.
Exactly.
If that's not the Britain they fought for, what did they think they were going to get when they were on the same side as Stalin?
Exactly.
All right, then. So we will get back into Mein Kampf next weekend, I guess, then.
Mein Kampf. Well, we've walked through all of the political history of Europe and the struggles between Jew and the Jews and the noble class of Europe, the middle class of Europe, since the French Revolution, and illustrated the Jew behind all of these communist and social revolutions, and how the Jew basically has taken over Germany and France and the Bolshevik Revolution and what's gone on with Russia. Now we should understand what the German people feared that allowed them to rally behind a man like Adolf Hitler, right?
Absolutely.
So we'll discuss Adolf Hitler and his comments on communism and Judaism next week.
So National Socialism was a natural, healthy response and reaction to Jewish domination.
Well, right, and fascism in Europe generally was, and maybe we'll discuss some of that too, was a reaction to the evils of Jewish capitalism. Because the fascist seeks to protect the industry and talent and produce of the nation, where capitalism seeks to vampirize it, to suck it dry and move it to China, right? I mean, that's what we've seen here, right? A fascist society would have never let all of our machine tools and technology go to China freely.
Pretty soon they'll move the whole world to China.
Well, praise Yahweh.
Absolutely.
We're going to prevail in this, and for that Wilhelm Marr is wrong because he didn't know his Bible.
All right. Next weekend, then. Yahweh bless.
Thank you. Praise Yahweh.